Boker Tov world. Today's daf in the Sechet Kedushin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Mem Vav. We got up to yesterday, the two dots on the third line, I believe. So that's almost right at the top of the daf. If I make a mistake, please let me know, but I think that's where we got up to. Itma. So we were... We've been talking about the question about what would happen if a ketana is mekabel a kedushin without the father's rishus. We spoke about many different cases. A case where the father's not in town, a case where she's not only mekabel the kedushin, she also goes to the chuppah, a case where the father was mekabel kedushin, and then she goes and is mekabel the chuppah, and so on. So there was a question, according to Rav and Shmuel, if she's mekabel a kedushin without the rishus of her father, we still have to be chayish, that maybe the condition is kosher, because maybe nisratze ha'av, and as I mentioned yesterday, there's a number of different ways that that would happen. We had a machlokas rishonim, whether it was considered to be maybe mitam zochin, the way the Ran learned, and maybe it was mitam harvus, which is a brilliant idea, that he's giving the money now, he tells the husband, basically give the money to my daughter, whatever. But that was the sheet of Rav and Shmuel. Now, there are cases where you might want to stop that kedushin. So what happens over there? Itma. A ketana shenizkach shelo ledat avia. So then Rav says, look, as long as the father has not as yet heard about it, so she could change her mind. And bein he, bein avia yecholin la'akev, she could change her mind, and the father obviously can say, when he hears about it, absolutely not. I mean, because remember that the only issue that we had, according to Rav and Shmuel, was that we were worried that maybe the father was mekabel, you know, whatever the time is. And if he says beferish that I don't want this, so then there's no problem. There would be nothing to worry about at all. There's no kedushin. Masha Enkin, Rav Asi says, and wait a minute, her father can definitely say no. But she, having once accepted this kedushin, she can't say no, even if the father didn't know about it yet. But if the father is accepting it at the time that he finds out, the fact that she said no doesn't matter, because she was already mikabel at the kedushin, and that's dependent on the father, not on her. So now the question is there a problem with Ravasi's shita because of the following brisa? Some say it was Chiyabarav that pointed out the problem in the brisa. Now, this is a fascinating circuit. Listen to what we're trying to compare this entire issue to. Remember that there's a din of someone who seduces a child, and then the halacha is that if the father is willing, so then he has to marry her. And if the father refuses to allow him to marry her, so then he has to pay the knas, right? Kimora betulot. So it says over there an interesting thing. It says, im ba'en avia letitalo, if the father refuses to give her to him, so then kesev yishko kimora betulot. Then he pays. Now, the question over there is we're talking about a case over here where he obviously had slept with her before, and we're assuming that the case is that he had slept with her and seduced her into marriage, not just into sleeping with him. Now, we'll discuss a little bit later why we're making that assumption, but that's what we're assuming. So he talked her into the fact that they will be man and wife. So he was Makadosh or Bibiya, essentially. Now, it says over there in the Braita, why does it say if the father ma'en yi ma'en? What's the double lashon? Yeah, I understand the way we translate it. If he definitely, absolutely refuses, there's no need for that word. So if he would refuse, then he would not have to pay. He has to pay the knas if he doesn't refuse, so then he marries her. Now, the Braita says, I'll tell you what that double lashon is for. Because if it would have just said ma'en avia, I would have said, only the father can refuse. But what about her? She wouldn't be able to refuse. Talmud Lomar, ima ein, ima ein, mikol makom. So even if the girl is the one who refused, it's also means that she can actually, after she already allowed him to sleep with her in order that they be married, nonetheless, she could change until such time as there's an actual condition. That seems to be the opposite of Ravasi, because Ravasi said once she was mekabel a kedushin, then it's only up to the father. It's not up to her at all to change her mind, even if currently the father, he doesn't yet know about it. So Rav, obviously Rav, I mean, he didn't have to answer for Ravasi because he doesn't agree with Ravasi. But Rav said, this is a ridiculous riot. So Rav said to those who asked, whoever it was, we had a couple of options, whoever asked this kasha on Ravasi should stop being ridiculous. How many times have I told you, lo tizglu basar ibcha? Stop, this is in Yiddish where the word comes from, stop being tzedret. Tzedret means upside down, ibcha. Stop going with things that are just ridiculous. It's tzedret. Because obviously Ravasi will tell you, what the heck makes you think that this guy had seduced her in order to marry her? Why couldn't he have just seduced her? So he'll tell you, he actually had seduced her for a stone, not to marry her. And therefore has absolutely nothing to do with the question that we raised. The question that I was arguing about with Ravasi was in a case where she was Mikabela's Kedushin. And now you're talking about a case where she went to bed with somebody. What does that have to do with it? Now, the question, of course, is, Rabbi Isai, why in the world did the Gemara make the assumption that it's talking about, and why did they think this was a kasha on Ravasi? This is a very interesting sugya, because if you think about it, there's a bit of a problem over here, according to the Rambam. Remember that the Rambam's shita is, those of you who have been learning the Hilchos Ishus, Moshe's not even over here, so I'm not even going to pitch his lines. But anyway, so you know that the Rambam holds that sleeping with a woman without Kiddushin is included in the Isser of the Kidesha, right? So therefore, there's a famous kasha on the Rambam. How, according to the Rambam, would someone who seduces a girl ever be chayev to pay the knas? Because the halacha is that eino lokeu mishalem. So if a person is going to be chayev malchus for being over on an iser, he does not pay a knas for that same iser. And therefore, there's a problem how to understand the whole sugya according to the Rambam. Now, if the Gemara is taking for granted that that's why, it's probable that he did not want just to sleep with her, which would be an iser lav, and he figured that he will sleep with her in order for to have kedushin. Fine. So that would explain why we made that assumption. Why in the end, my dearest Rabbi Isai, in the end, how does the Rambam understand it if we come out that it's not like that? Because remember, if you're medayik in the Rambam, you will see that it's the pashtus of the Rambam, even though the Rambam paskin is not like this, the pashtus of the Rambam is that if he seduced her for pure sex, then he's over. But if he seduces her in order to have a lover, he just doesn't want to marry her. And but he figures that they will live together as man and wife without getting married. That's a common situation. There the Rambam doesn't answer it. And that's what the Rambam argues on and says the Rambam does answer it. But many Achronim, besides many who argue on the Rambam completely, they say that even according to the Rambam, if the person, there's a big difference between a person who wants to have a lover available, which even though that's kavua, it still would be also according to the Rambam without kedushin. But if he wants to actually live with her, not as casual lovers to be available whenever they feel like it, but he wants to live with her as man and wife. He just doesn't want to get married. That there, even the Rambam would be made a, that there would be no chiyuv. So therefore, Gemara would be coming out, basically, with this discussion, subliminally, between the lines. All right? Okay, anyway. So therefore, Rav says, obviously, Ravasi is going to tell you that the Pasuk isn't talking about that case. The Brice is referring to a case where he just slept with her, and he seduces her shalom l'shem kedushin. What? If it was Shalola Shem Kedushin, I says, why do I need the Pasuk to tell me that if the father refuses to give her? What would I think? That if it was Shalola Shem Kedushin, that gives him the right to take this child whenever he wants her. That's insane. Bita Shalola Shem Yishuz Kroboy, what, I need a Pasuk to tell me that the father does not have to give her to him? Of course he doesn't. I mean, Bishlam, if you're telling me the original Pitui was the Shem Kedushin, I say, okay, that we could see that the Pasuk says we need the father to agree. But over here, there never even was any kind of Maisa Kedushin. So what do I need him to refuse? He doesn't need to refuse. Omer of Nachum Bar Yitzchak, we could talk about a case. As you said, that was Shalola Shem Kedushin. But the Chiddush is that if at some point in the future, she does not get married to him, that means that she would be able to prevent the Kedushin, and that at that point, he would have to pay the Knas. So he never did a Maisa Kedushin, and the truth is that the father was Maskim, right? But if she wasn't Maskim, then, even though the father has the right to accept the Kedushin, and she's married to him, he's going to have to pay the Knas anyway. Why? Because Ma'ein Yi Ma'ein. That's the point. Either of them can refuse this relationship. See, even though the father has a right to be Mekabel Kedushin from anybody without her Rotzen, he's perfectly welcome to go and do that, as far as the Torah is concerned, but it's not going to change the chiv of the knas on the seducer. That's the issue. Wow, says Amar Lubavitch. Of course. If that's the way you understand the pasuk, that we're talking about that it was not for Kedushin, then that explains another brayta that always concerned me. Yehochi anu detanina. Mohor yimarenu lo leisha. He has to go ahead and give her a ksuva and so on as a wife. So that means that shetzricha hemenu kedushin, that mehor yimaren is a lashon that he needs to make a kedushin, an act of kedushin. Now I didn't understand. What do you mean he needs to make an act of kedushin? He did make an act of kedushin. That's what I thought, like the Gemara thought before. But if that's true, then what would be the meaning of making a kedushin? Impitala shumishut originally. So why do we need now a kedushin? What would the meaning be of mohor yimarena? If the father agrees, then that should be enough, right? Not necessarily. Not necessarily, because what it might be saying is that in this case, you need a new act of kedushin with the father's involvement, lechatchila, and not an ex post facto acceptance of the kedushin with the various chaps that the rishonim have of its being midin orev or whatever it is. And in this case, since it was a seduction, and therefore the father is upset about it or whatever, even if he's mekabel, but we need to go through a perfectly normal act of kedushin, maybe that's all that it means. So, I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Rabbi Yosef. I mean, it certainly makes more sense this way that there never was an act of kedushin in the first place. So how are we coming out, Rabbi Yosef? We're coming out that if you hold that if she is mekabel at kedushin, and the father in the end is mitratse, so then if she refuses, it doesn't mean she can prevent, according to Ravasi, doesn't mean she can prevent the kedushin from being chal. But what she can do is by saying, I don't like this guy, that in that case, he's going to have to pay the knas, even though the father was mekabel kedushin for her from the guy who seduced her. That's the point. As far as what would be the issue in a normal case where she wasn't seduced and they got together, so then that would be a machlokas between Rav and Ravasi. Can the woman, up until the point, I should say the girl, the child, can she refuse the kedushin before the father hears about it? Or once she did the mice of the kedushin, so then the father's acceptance already empowers that original mice of kedushin. So, now we have our Sir Richard, but he's been running around buying a lulav from what it looked like in the pictures. And that brings us to Doc. Yes, indeed.
Wait, was right.
Wait.
Here we go. We got ourselves a nice misnagdash zokta helik mishnah, a perfect litvisha zokta helik mishnah. I'm telling you, it's as if Doc just came over from Lita. Unbelievable. Ha'imer le'isha. Hitkatshili bitmorazu. So we just had this mishnah because we were bringing it, remember, as a raya about the question of whether Rabbi Yehuda holds of Rabbi Shimon and so on. We just spoke about this mishnah, but let's go through it again. So a guy says to a woman, okay, how about a date? And what he really means is, how about taking this date and being married to me? So he's got chili bitmorazu. All right, so take this date and be mekudeshes to me. And then he takes out another date and he says, it's got chili bizu. And then he says, it's got chili bizu. Okay, so now the question over here is, since he used the word hitkachi, each one of these is a separate act of kedushin, and they cannot be added up together in order to equal a shava pruta. So therefore, only if yesh ba'achat mehem shava pruta mekudeshet, if one of these dates, any of these dates, if they have a shava pruta, then she's mekudeshet. But if not, you can't put it all together because he separated them from each other. But suppose he gives her over these dates, and he says, he's kachili, bezu, ubezu, ubezu, and he doesn't separate the words with hitkachi. And remember, this is where we got to the issue, which we'll go through it again, about what happens if a person says, shvua lo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha. Same case that we had the machlokas in the chiyav of a shvua. So if he puts it all together and he's giving it this one and this one in this one, so then if you have all of them together being worth a shava pruta, then she's mekudeshet. You don't need only one of them alone to be worth a shava pruta. Any one of them could be worth a shava pruta. How about in the case, if I tell chelet rishona rishona, how about if she's sort of hungry and she eats these dates one at a time as she's being given the dates? What would be the thing over there? So she's eating them one by one. Then, eina mekudeshet shad sheba achas mehem shava pruta. Then one of them needs to be worth a shava pruta because you cannot combine them if they're not all there at one time. Now, this is not clear. Why exactly would that be true? And what case is it referring to? So this, the Gemara is coming to explain in a moment. But first, we're going to go through the discussion that we had earlier. And that was the discussion of who is the Tana that holds that if you say he's got she for each one of them, then it's a separate act. But if you are giving them one after the other, even though you said with this one and with this one and with this one, that then they're not considered to be separate acts. Okay, so who's that Mandi Omar that says only hitkachi is good enough to split it into two separate acts? Omar Rabba, as we saw before, Rabbi Shimoni, because Rabbi Shimon, when it comes to the question of a bunch of people claiming, you took my wallet, you never get, hey, what's the matter? Where's my wallet? And everybody is shouting together. And he says, Shvua shein di lo wallet shalcha, v'shvua shalosh lecha, v'shvua shalosh shalcha. Only if he says a shvua to everyone separately, then is he chayev. But if he says shvua lo lecha, lo lecha, lo lecha, or lo lecha, lo lecha, lo lecha shvua, that would not be b'chayev him separately. So you see, according to Rabbi Shimon, you need a complete differentiation between one statement and the other. Same thing that our mission is saying. You have to say he's got chili, he's got chili, he's got chili. It has to be a complete differentiation. Okay. So that's going like Rabbi Shimon. All right, now, let's get on to the next cases. Bezo ubezo ubezo. Im yesh bekulam shava pruta. So now, if she was eating them one by one, that's what bothers us now, that if, Gavi, is there any way to get a light on your face instead of behind your face, since all I could see is a bottle of water, and I can't even tell if it has boost in it or not. That's not good. Maybe face the window here. Okay, much better. Much better indeed. Fine. So now, it says if she was eating them one by one, then you can't combine them. All right. Now, what part of the Mishnah did that statement refer to? Remember, we had two different, completely different situations. One where you said, itkachili, on each one individually, and one where you simply said bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. So when it says if she was eating them, what part was that going back on? I mean, it doesn't make sense to say it was going back on the opening, because over there, the opening case where she was told he'd catch she on each one separately, l'chora makes absolutely no difference if she was eating it or she wasn't eating it. We said over there that you need to have one of them separately being worth a shavah pruta, even if she wasn't eating them. So what would eating them add, right? I mean, isn't it true, afilu manachat nami, even if she was sitting there and they were in a plate in front of her? Also, it wouldn't be mekudeshes unless one was worth. He said on every one of them separately. So therefore, you're going to have to say, I think, that it's going on the second case, El HaSeifa, where he said, bazoo, bazoo, bazoo. So then I'll tell you what doesn't make sense to me. You're saying, if it's Mashma the Mishnah, if any single one of those dates was worth a shavah pruta, then even though she was eating them as they were being presented, it would be a kosher kedushin. So what does that mean? Anyone? Meaning even the first date? I mean, let's analyze what's going on over here. The guy gives her a date. Okay, she's a little bit hasty on the draw over here, and she pops it into her mouth. Says, good date, let's have another date. Right? But did she have a right to eat that? I mean, he was giving it to her to wait until there was a kedushin at the end, right? And she doesn't wait. Instead, she eats. Okay, so if she eats it, we can assume that she ate his date, and therefore she owes him money for that date. And now, what is that? That's called a loan. Now, if subsequently he says, okay, great, you already ate my date, you enjoyed my date, hope you had a good time, so now be mekudeshet to me with that money. With what money? The money that the date was worth. I already ate that date. So you're not giving me anything. But I gave it to you before. I know, but you didn't give it to me to be mekudeshet until everything was there, and it wasn't there at that time. It was only a loan. Now, remember that we had before, and we're going to go into this again, that if a woman owes you $1 million and you say, okay, so be mekudeshet to me with the $1 million that I lent you, it's not anything because you didn't give her anything. What you gave her was before, that was for a loan. It was not for kedushin. And therefore, even if the money is still around, that's her money. That's not your money anymore. You gave her that money to use for whatever it is she wants as a loan. Now she owes you money. So you can't say, be mekudeshet to me from the money that you owe me. Now, remember, you could say, but this is only if you would say it beferish in this way. You could say, what is it worth to you if I forgive that loan? Okay, is it worth a dollar to you? All right, so be mekudeshet to me for that dollar. That you can do, because that is an actual hanah, like any other hanah. But you cannot use the original money of the loan. That's the point. So over here, where you're giving her that first date, and she ate it. And now, 5 minutes later, she has eaten three dates. So you say, well, if any of them was a shavah pruta, no. The first one isn't going to count as a shavah pruta, because it's a loan. The second one's not going to count. Only the last one would count. If the last one was worth the shavah pruta, you could say that she was willing to be mekudeshet with that shavah pruta, right? So then, isn't it a milva? Let's take a look now in the Gemara and bring that out. So v'afilu b'kamaita, you're trying to tell me that even if that first date that she popped into her mouth was worth the shavah pruta, it's a kosher kedushin, why? Is it not a loan? V'amilvahi. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, oh my God, what a mess, what a mess. Now we got ourselves a Mishnah. The Mishnah is beautifully brought out. We got a table, we got the meat, we got the steaks, we got our steak knife. Only thing we're missing is a little bit of a mouth, because we're too dumb to figure out what the heck it means. We're unable to eat. Ve'en lanu le'achol. Gosh, this is straight out of the Matrix. No mouth. So what are we going to do? Meaning that I don't see any way out of this. There's no way to make this make sense. Okay. So Rav and Shmuel say, I'll tell you what it means. It's going back on the Reisha. Okay? And it's saying nothing about this idea of Tziruf. What it's saying is, Lo mi boy kama. not only it's adding a chiddush, not only in a case where she's put the dates down in a plate and they're all here, is she mekudeshet, if one of them is worth a shava pruta. That certainly is true. That one of them has to be worth a shava pruta. And if not, then there was no kedushin, because he said a separate hitkachi for every last one, right? But you might have thought that in the case where she pops the dates into her mouth, maybe we don't need a shava pruta. Why? Because if you get immediate pleasure from something, and we see that she's enjoying this to the extent that she would be happy indeed to be mekudeshet, so maybe you don't need a shava pruta. And maybe shava pruta is only where you have cash that you're going to have to spend. But when you're having the actual pleasure, so then, ema gomro makne yanafsha, maybe a woman is makna herself for the immediacy of the pleasure. So ema gomra umekanya nafsha. So maybe in that case, she would be mekudeshet even if it isn't worth a shava pruta. Kamash malon. So the Mishnah is not talking about a case of a loan. The Mishnah is talking about where each one of them was a separate act of kedushin, and the only chiddush is nothing to do with milva or anything like it. The chiddush is a general chiddush in kedushin, that even though the woman gets immediate pleasure, it's not considered to be a kedushin unless there is a shava pruta. Okay, so this is one approach. Reb Ami says, I have another approach. I say it's going on the seifa, and we have to bite the bullet, and we have to admit that even though there's a problem of a milva, so it's a loan, the Mishnah didn't mean if any of the dates are worth a shavar pruta. The Mishnah meant if the last date is worth a shavar pruta, so then she would be willing to accept that shavar pruta for her condition. So when it says ache ba'achas b'yam shavar pruta, it doesn't mean any old date. It means the last one would be worth a shavar pruta. But if she wanted to be mekudeshet with the earlier one, it wouldn't work because it was a milva. Rava makes a brilliant analysis of Reb Ami. Okay. So first of all, says Rava, there's three very important things that you can learn from the way Reb Ami just answered the question. First of all, Shmami Nimin Rabami Tlas. Three things. Let me tell you the first thing. The first thing is that since Reb Ami says we have to work it out in such a way that she was not Mekudeshes Bemilva, so therefore he accepts the ruling that a Mekadesh Bemilva ain't a Mekudesh. That's obvious. Otherwise, there's nothing to discuss over here. He's only coming to address that problem. So, A, Mekadesh Bemilva ain't a Mekudesh. B, he does say that when the first two dates were already eaten, and they are a milva, in the event that the third date was worth a shava pruta, that the kedushin is chal. But wait, in reality, this woman was given three dates. And if she was necha to the kedushin because of the three dates, then she's not mekudesha, because two out of the three dates are not considered to be valid for kedusha because they're a milva. So what good is it to say that the last one was a shava pruta, but he wasn't being mekadosher with the last one? He was being mekadosher with all of them. So what must you conclude that Reb Ami is taking for granted? That if you say to a woman, remember, I lent you $1,000, okay? And here's another buck. So be mekudeshes to me with the $1,000 and this extra buck. That's a good kedushin, because that's basically what's happening over here. Why is it a good kedushin? Because it means that if you're mekadesh, b'milva, and the pruta, then the woman's das, when she's mekabelis, the kedushin, is on the last pruta, and not on the milva. That's what you see from here. Okay. And then the third amazing thing that you see from here is that he accepted the assumption that the first dates are alone. Now, why do we have to say the first dates are alone? Why can't we say that what he's doing is he's giving her a long-term kiddush? Enjoy this date and enjoy this date. There's no loan. I'm happy for you to enjoy this date and enjoy that date and enjoy that date. Because apparently Rav Ami is saying, okay, let me ask you something. What would be the status if at the end the guy changes his mind and he doesn't give her the last date? Right? He says, never mind. Or she decides she doesn't want this kedusha. Does she have to give back her ring if she decides she doesn't want to be married? You broke the engagement, so to speak. Right? You're about to finish up the engagement as a kedusha, and you change your mind to the last one. Does she have to give back the ring? That's the question. Well, you see from Abami that you have to give up back the ring. Because otherwise, why is it alone? It's not alone. I would anyway have let you keep it. So then that means that when you finish up, you've got yourself a full-scale kedusha. Hope you enjoy those 3 dates. And with the hana of those 3 dates, you're mekudeshes to me. What does it have to do with a milva? You see from Rav Ami that he accepted the hanacha that there's a problem over here of a milva, which must mean that when it's given to her, it's only given on the understanding that this is going to be consummated with a kedusha. If not, then you'd have to return it. So you see from here, Shema Mina Ma'ot Ba'alma Chozrim, that in every case, normal cases, it's not, forget about these, but if Kedushin money ended up not creating a Kedushin, you'd have to give it back. Okay, so now the question is like this. We're talking about this weird situation. I mean, we've raised the question about whether money given ostensibly for Kedushin can be viewed as a loan or is it viewed as a gift. Well, this is an interesting question, because what if a person goes over to his sister and he says, he gives her $1,000. Here, be my wife. Rav says the money has got to be given back to him. Shmuel says, of course the money doesn't have to give given back. What, you really think the guy thought that he was going to be able to make his sister his wife? He meant it as a gift. So the ma'ot are a matana. She could keep it. Well, and according to Rav, what was the guy thinking? Rav amar ma'ot chozrim, because obviously everybody knows, ein kedusha tofsin ba'achoto, he can't make his sister his wife. So why is he giving her this money? He's giving it to her because he wants her to keep the money for him. So therefore, he's giving it to her l'shem pikadon, and he assumes that she's going to get the money back from her later. That's crazy. Then why wouldn't he just say, could you keep my wallet for me? So, why doesn't he just say that? Why does he have to go through this whole pretense? Well, because he knows his sister. She's always hung up on these things. I don't know how to take your money. I don't want to take responsibility, blah, blah, blah. And she's not going to accept it from him. So he doesn't have anything to do right now. He's got to have somebody take care of the money. So he gives it to her and he says, here, there should be a, that just totally confuses her. She has the money, and then he comes back and he says, you didn't really think I was going to be able to make you my wife, did you? Okay, so give me back my money. All right. But Shmuel says, the ma'ot matana, adam yodea she'en kedushin tov sebachoto, and he's giving it to her as a gift. And he's giving, so let him say, I want to gift you $1,000. What's all of this craziness? So give it to her. Name Alala Shumatana. Because he doesn't want to embarrass her. It's going to be very embarrassing. She should take from her kid brother. Going to take $1,000. So he says this is sort of just to cover what he's doing, that it shouldn't be embarrassing. I love you so much. I wish you could be my wife. Here, take this. Okay. So Mozi Ravina. Now, the question is Shmuel correct? Because let's think about a Mishnah. Now, what Shmuel is saying is that if a person knows 100% that something is, then he must mean to give it for another purpose, right? That's what Shmuel is saying. Okay, let's imagine a case like this. A guy goes over to Barnea, and he gives him a cup of flour, right? And he says, here, this flour is my challah for what I am going to be making the challahs on Shabbos. Now, flour cannot be given as challah, obviously. The Torah says, Reshit Ariso Techem. Only a dough can be given as flour. So, in this case, it's not considered to be challah, but you know what? We don't say that, well, he just meant it to give it to the Kohen as a gift. We say the Kohen's got to give it back. If he doesn't give it back, it's as if he stole it. So it's Gezel Be'at Kohen. Why? Now, my Gezel Be'at Kohen, according to Shmuel, we should say, Adam Yodea Shein Mafrishin Challah Kemach. Nobody in his right mind gives raw flour as challah. And therefore, he must have just wanted to give it to the Kohen as a gift. V'natan L'Shein Matana. Why do we make the coin, give it back, and say that it would be gezel? Says the Gemara, no, it's different. You know why the coin has to give it back? Not because the guy did want to give it as a gift anyway. That's for sure. But over there, it's different because if the coin keeps it, we could end up with a disaster on our hands of having somebody eating tefil. Because imagine a case where the guy gives him this challah, so to speak, this kemach, this flour is challah, and the kohen had a dough, and it wasn't enough of a dough to be mechayev him in taking off challah, and he throws this additional flour into it, and now he mixes it all together, and now it becomes chayev and challah. But this kohen may think that this dough is not mitzaref, this flour is not mitzaref, the original dough, because it was given to him as challah. And therefore, he'll assume that his new dough, which does have a shear of challah, is not chayev and challah, because some of it was made with this kemach precursor to challah, and that's not mechayev and challah. So he'll come to eat teva, vasil mechal bativla. Wait a minute. Didn't you just say a minute ago that that's the whole question that you had, that every idiot knows you can't take off challah with flour? So how would the kohen be so stupid as to make that mistake? You said that a kohen knows that. So how could he come to eat tevel? Yeah, he knows it, but he doesn't fully understand it. In other words, he knows that you can't be mafresh challah kemach, but he does not really understand the full implications of that halacha. You know what he thinks? He thinks that the Torah was mechayev you to give the kohen a piece of the dough or a piece of the actual baked challah, because the Torah wants the kohen to have immediate pleasure and be able to eat something good. But if the kohen is willing to accept it, even in a state of flour, and make it for himself, so maybe then it would be okay. So he thinks, the Sovatam Ayumai, why did the Torah say you have to wait till you have a dough? Mishum tircha de kohen. The kohen shouldn't have to worry about making the bread. And he was meichel that. V'tircha de kohen achilte. He was meichel that, and he accepted the flour. So he would think that that flour is not going to be chayim in taking off challah from. That's why we say, make him give it back, and therefore we won't have this problem. Okay, still, I mean, why do you have to make him give it back? According to Shmuel, remember, the das of the person who gave it was that the kohen should be able to keep it. Didn't you say that? So why does he have to give it back? All you're worried about is going to come and eat it in steva? You can make a takana that the kohen can keep this flour, but he's not allowed to eat it until he makes sure that he takes challah off from somewhere else. Doesn't have to be mumakom acher, but no, that's what we normally say. I mean, we've got so many cases like this. Here, I'll give you an example, a case like this in Demai, okay? Milotam, we have a mission like this. Somebody takes off truma from a noku v'ashena noku, from a flower pot that had a hole in it, and that is chayev in truma, and he takes off on things that grew in a flower pot that didn't have a hole in it, and that's not chayev in truma, because it's not considered to be connected to the ground. So it's only min rabbanan, and therefore you would have a case where you've got tevel min d'oraisa, because if he took off this truma and he thinks it's truma, it isn't truma min ha'tera, because he was mafrish min achiyev al ha'ptur, and that's not truma. So we don't say over there, give it back. We say, don't eat it until you take off truma some meisers from somewhere else where it's chayev. That's all. But why can't we say the same thing over here? Let the kohen keep it and tell him, but you should know, you're not allowed to eat this unless you take off challah from somewhere else. Well, you know why? Because we don't believe that the kohen is going to listen to us. Remember, kohanim are very stubborn. You may have noticed that. So therefore, in the case where there were two pots, one of them is nokov, one of them is ain't a nokov, the kohen says, all right, that makes some sense. After all, it was two different containers. They may know something I don't know. But in a case where there's no issue that seems to make sense to him, what do you mean I got to take it back again? The guy gave it to me, his challah. What kind of crazy chumras are these? I don't go for these chumras. So we're afraid he's not going to listen, right? So betray money if he's got something that shouts out at him. This is no good because it was taken from the wrong thing. Okay, I can hear that. But b'chad mana lo tzayis, he won't listen to you in that case. Okay. Or you can say, and this is much kinder to Kohanim. Kohanim may be stubborn, but they ain't stupid. And therefore, if that's the case, of course the Kohen will listen to you. You tell him they're mechuyev to take off challah from elsewhere. Challah is not chal on flour. Why wouldn't he listen to you? A Kohen will be made tzitzayet. And the problem over here is not about the Kohen. The problem is about the guy who gave it to the Kohen. If the Kohen is allowed to keep it, and the guy who gave it to the Kohen, maybe an Am Haaretz, and he thinks that, okay, if I gave it to the Kohen and he keeps it, so then my dough, which I took off the challah from the flour for, would be kosher. He'll eat his own dough thinking that he took care of it, and he didn't. But didn't you say a minute ago that Adam Yodea Shein Mafrishin Challah Kemah? You said everybody knows that. That was the basis of your question on Shmuel. How come all of a sudden we're worried that he doesn't know it? Make up your mind. Well, he knows, but he doesn't understand. Yodea ve'enu Yodea. He knows that you're not supposed to be Mafrish Challah Kemah, but he doesn't know why. He thinks the reason is the Torah is always so good to Kohanim, and you have to be really extra special nice to Kohanim. And even when they put water in your face and so on, you have to smile at them and pretend that they're good people. So in that case, the guy says, okay, but this Kohen was very nice to me, and he accepted my flour. And he said, he didn't tell me, hey, buddy, you're giving something to a Kohen, you got to give him something that's not a tircha for the Kohen. No, he was a nice guy, and he accepted it. So the guy will think, okay, so then bidi avad, if the Kohen accepted it, so now I don't have to take off any more challah, and he'll come to eat it b'teva. Okay, but we have the same question we had before. Why not let the Kohen keep it, right? Let it be kosher truma, meaning it'll be like a gift, obviously not truma. And let's tell the guy who gave it, but you have to give the challah again. After all, we have the Mishnah, and it uses the same Mishnah. Somebody who's Torah Misha'inu Nokov Ala Nokov, it's truma, the Kohen keeps it, because the guy had in mind to give it to the Kohen. V'yachzor v'yachron. So in the case of the flour and the challah, it should be the same thing. Let the Kohen keep the flour and tell the guy that he's going to have to go back and be term again. Well, we already told you. People are ready to listen when it makes a little bit of sense. And if it's in two separate containers, one is Nokov, one is Eino Nokov, so then he said, okay, I can hear that I might have made a mistake. But that Bechad Mano Lot Soyis, you said he's not going to listen. So that's the answer. What do you mean he's not going to listen? Excuse me. What about the Mishnah? We've got a Mishnah in Trumas that says that he will listen. Velotzayis, what's not? What about this Mishnah? Somebody takes off a gourd, Torim Kishut, or a cucumber, some understand Kishut to be. And then it found, when they tried to eat it, it was one of these really bitter ones. So it was Mara. Or he takes off a melon, and they open it up, and it's all spoiled. So the din over there is, it's kosher truma, but he has to go back and take truma again. Now, over here, there's no two separate monos, and we didn't say that you have to give back the truma. We said it's truma, and you go and you take off the truma again. Yes, that's true. You know why? Because midiraisa, even if you were torim, something that was bitter or something that wasn't all that good, it was a spoiled melon, it would still be kosher truma. And I'll prove it to you from Rabbi Loy, as I'm about to show you. And therefore, if he doesn't listen, it's not a disaster, because really, midiraisa, everything was fine. So that's the point. And how do I know that midiraisa was fine, even if it was poor quality? To Yomer Rabbi Eloy, how do we know that someone who was toreim min hara'ah halayafa, he used very low quality fruit, and he used that to take off truma. How do we know that the truma is still truma, as far as the Torah is concerned? Shenemar, v'lo tisu alav chet parim chemet chelbo. When you take off the highest quality things, and you give it to my kayanim and my levim, then you will not be in any way responsible for any type of avera. You will be in a good shape, mashma, that you will have an ovain, you're going to have a chait, if you don't take off the good stuff, right? Now, what would my ovain be? If the truma was never chal, so then I'm going to have to give real truma again. So what did I do wrong? So I tried to give truma and it didn't work. Okay, fine. So I'll give truma again. Therefore, Tainas Rabbi Loi, imei no kadosh, if that truma was not teifes the kedusha of truma, what did I do wrong? I didn't do any kind of sin. Where's the chait? Chait lama. From here, you see clearly that the truma is chal and the Torah is angry at you for making low quality truma. That's the point. So mikan l'torei min ha'ra'al ha'yafa, shetrumato truma. So in that case, we're not worried about the guy not listening, because even if he doesn't listen, it's not going to be any kind of disaster. Hashenkin, over here, we are concerned, because if he doesn't listen, he's going to be eating tevel mamish.